planted through drones, right? Finding open wireless networks, and the payloads are actually then going loopholing the whole telco systems and a lot of the logging mechanisms that we rely on today. So there's interesting perspectives with drones, and it's fascinating. Cloud services, I mean, everybody's talking about cloud. What is cloud? You know, there's the cloud is so much, but cloud services often means that you're going to a bigger provider, maybe Microsoft, Amazon, Google. Maybe you're taking your data from Norway to another country. There's a lot of discussions in the national public now in terms of what we can do and not do in terms of cloud services, especially from an authority point of view. If the Norwegian authority wants to actually check and control if the safeguards are in place and the data center is in Ireland, do we have the rights to do so? These things are new. Things are going, the technology is it's moving so fast ahead of the public sector and the policy perspectives that this speed is actually the main challenge here. So wearable technology, 3D printing, we've done a lot of the assessments here. I'm not going to go through everything because it's going to be too long, I see. But these are some of the drivers that we see are influencing the vulnerabilities we have found. And then the question comes, does anyone understand fully our digital value chain? This is a question we have discussed quite a bit. And when I'm talking about the full digital value chain, I'm not talking about from here to a server. I'm talking about power grid. I'm talking about the telco, Ekom. I'm talking about if there's a payment app that you're using on your mobile, you have to go through the banking infrastructure, the authentication infrastructure. Maybe that they're hosted in India because there's offshoring involved in the value chain. Does anyone actually understand our value chains? Verdikjedene? Our conclusion there is no. If you're going to go to someone and say, you know, I want someone to actually map up the value chain and actually tell me the vulnerabilities that our nation is relying upon, there's no single point you can go to. You have fraction of this in different areas, but actually understanding the full scope here is very difficult. And that makes it complex, and the complexity by itself is a big risk. From doing risk assessments, that's always on your risk radar, right? The complexity of actually operating and safeguarding an environment is a huge undertaking by itself. The Commission not only used time on targeted cyber attacks, we also used time on mishaps, wrongdoings, bugs. So anything that can actually take down services or make have consequences for our society was the scope. But I'll focus mostly on the cybersecurity and targeted attacks today. So I want to just an example here in terms of these vulnerabilities and the incidents we see on national level. Now I've exemplified this through some of the incidents and vulnerabilities that have been exposed in the media through the e-com area. So the National Communication Authority publicized these numbers just last year, and I think it's interesting to see how much is actually targeted attacks. How much is actually wrongdoings or someone actually doing a mistake, and how much is influenced by upgrades? And the numbers on the 40 most serious incidents in the Norwegian space the last few years, so this is based on 40 main incidents, 35% of these incidents were based on software bugs that took down the telco, the ISP's communication in one region or a city. 25% were incidents related to fiber transmission errors. 20% were power outage. So of course, all the things we're doing now are requiring a lot of power in terms of the digital world. And not only we have reserve power, but sometimes the reserve power is not sufficient enough to support the electronic commerce, electronic infrastructure. And the last one is on planned changes. 15% of incidents were caused by planned changes to our infrastructure. And that's, I think that's quite low. Typically, changes generate downtime or issues or mishaps. and 15% is quite low. So that this means that the Norwegian telecommunications have very good change management routines and processes. But you notice one thing. It's not, where's the cyber attacks? Well, I think one reflection here, and that's my personal view, is that it's hard to prove that things are caused by someone tampering or doing something on purpose, right? It's not that easy to say, it's a targeted attack, but it's easier to say what the consequences is. So I think we have a couple of incidents that you could say it's cyber attacks or cyber incidents or information security issues. But in terms of actually proving it, this is not a part of the statistics. Some of the other vulnerabilities that we saw across the sectors was due to SCADA systems connected to administrative systems, which is not any news, right? Most people know about this, right? There's been a trend the last few years where you can gain a lot of efficiency and cut costs by connecting SCADA or in process control systems. SCADA systems is the one that can open, ventiler. It could actually regulate our power. It could open water pipes, that type of thing. So SCADA systems is a big topic also in terms of research. And SCADA, where did they have SCADA? It was always pinpointed as one of the top five vulnerabilities that they see in their sector. So either it's water or sewage, it's transportation, if it's power, they all say the same things. The SCADA and ICS, actually securing that environment is a big issue. And then the other part is the third-party dependency. And I think there's very few services in Norway, at least, that doesn't have a third party involved. Either operating a service or actually delivering a product, right? No one really fully have their own control over these environments. So having a third party with remote access into your value chain is the way most industries are working. The Malaysian airline that crashed way back, the last beacon from that aircraft was to Rolls-Royce operations and their remote access to the plane. This shows you that remote access into oil and gas industry, any industry we looked at, is very typical. I mean, you don't have capacity, competence in-house to do all the things that you need to do. You have outsourced. So this is very typical, but it makes it more complex to govern and hence also often more vulnerable. Complexity I talked about, and the last point is legacy systems. My goodness, huh? There's a lot of legacy systems out there. Mainframe, bank and finance, a lot of mainframe. Any sector you look at today, there's digital depth. No questions about it. And it's costly to get out of it, very costly often, and that's why it's not been transformed into newer technologies. But the legacy systems often don't come with access control mechanisms that are up to date, right? What about logging? What about security in general? Legacy systems is often a pain point in a organizational risk analysis. And legacy systems is here. You can't get out of a legacy problem if you don't have unlimited money, and I don't think we're there. All right, so I'm going to skip to some of the countermeasures, because recommendations. So now I'm talking a little bit about the backdrop, and the last point I want to touch upon is a big discussion in Norway. I'll tell you this. Do you know this symbol here, who have I? There's been so much discussion, both in the commission and the international area. I can't leave this out. But there's been, on the governmental area, concerns about having Chinese vendors into the Norwegian infrastructure. It's not a secret, and it's been discussed quite a bit openly in public. That was okay until this guy came along, right? So then you have the Chinese perspective on one side and the concerns there, but Edward Snowden actually exemplified that this is not a Chinese discussion. This is, you know, if you're going to exclude American vendors, are you going to exclude Chinese vendors to your infrastructure? How much is left? You're depending upon these countries. So the discussion is, how do we trust some of the vendors 100%? And there's a lot of research being initiated on this question. I mean, you can't do code review every single line. You can't cover yourself. This has been a long discussion in the commission. I mean, when working in Telenor and other companies, you know, can't we just have it, you know, put some money in it, fix the problem? You know, that's not human. You can't do that. You can't read code by code. You have the hardware. How to have to examine that in terms of the software and the whole stack here. You cannot do a full analysis. At least not now. Maybe in the future you have the tools to do so, but at the moment you don't. And we can't exclude all these vendors in our infrastructure. I mean, we are relying upon these vendors to operate critical infrastructure in Norway. So this is a big discussion, and it's sensitive in terms of countries. It's geopolitical discussions here, and it's quite interesting to see what's coming in that direction. Some of the, I'm going to just highlight, there's over 90 recommendations, concrete recommendations in the report. I'm just going to go through a few of them, which I think they're interesting and maybe highlight to you guys to read more about. And one is digital border surveillance. Digital grenseovervåkning. Should we have that in Norway? Well, in terms of the intelligence agencies, they have now three times in media the last year said we need this in Norway. Right? Other countries have it. We need it in Norway as well. That's the argumentation, right? You know, everybody else does it. We need it as well. And then this is a hot topic now because the ministries are looking at how to actually address this in terms of both privacy. I mean, this is could be very invasive, right? To our personal sphere and our personal data. Actually looking into tap wiring into all the traffic going towards Norway. You wouldn't get the satellite traffic, but you would get everything else, right? And then a technological discussion, because it's cryptography, right? Because, as you know, there's a trend, right? More and more traffic is encrypted. And so you wouldn't be able to look at anything else than metadata. And then what about the monitoring technology? Is not really good either. Huh? It's signature-based. It's not very good anonymity-based surveillance or monitoring. So there's a huge bunch, a lot of discussion on this right now. On the top level, policy. It's going to be interesting to see what the government in Norway actually will publicize around this issue. There's now a group looking at this, how to address these questions. And then another discussion about regulating cryptography. And why are we even discussing this? Any input? Why is this a topic? Well, it's actually a hot debate internationally. And it's been there for many years. Actually, it's been one wave of this was back in the late 80s, early 90s. And then they sort of died down a little bit. And then it's coming up full force now. And in the last 2-3 years, this has been very... I mean, any conference you go to that is sort of like a policy discussions, this is going to be one of the discussions. But why is it even a topic? Well, from the commission side, we said we should not regulate cryptography. Period. But the discussion is, of course, from a law enforcement perspective or intelligence agency, anti-terror perspective, counter-terrorism and so forth, it's actually quite demanding to decrypt 7 layers before you get to the payload. So how to maneuver and balance this space is a policy discussion, but we have been very clear from the commission side that the cryptography and encrypting traffic is actually a security mechanism. We're relying on it, and we don't believe in regulating it from a Norwegian perspective. But this is an international discussion. And then the next question is, do we have an operational capability to support both you as individuals, our trade and private industry, our government, our critical infrastructure? And this has been actually the toughest question to answer. You know, what is the actual capability in Norway to support when if there's going to be a digital crisis? Do we have enough people? Do we now have enough knowledge? Do we have enough equipment to actually support such a scenario? I'm not going to go too far into this because this is a big space, but there's one discussion that I want to pinpoint, and the police side is maybe the where it's under invested the last few years. So strengthening the police capability to combat cybercrime is maybe the biggest area that is so limited capability in Norway at the moment. The national authority here, Kripos, has the capacity of investigating 3 cases a year. A case is massive. Just don't underestimate a case. But that's, you know, if you have major cases coming to the national authorities, there's not enough hands. So we are working, of course, from CCIS point of view, together with Kripos and Økokrim and all these. But I mean, in terms of capacity today, it's very limited. If you go to your local police district, there's hardly any knowledge and capacity on this. If you look, except Oslo politidistrikt. So, are we able to scale our capabilities if we have a digital crisis like Ukraine? I would say that's close to a digital crisis in Norway, depending upon the escalation levels in the country. Are we able to scale? And we think we need to do more here. We need to look into mechanisms like the cyber reserve. Maybe you have some associations to other reserves, but that is an initiative that UK and US and many countries in Europe now are looking at or are actually implementing to have help trained staff that can help out in a digital crisis. How to do this? It's you know, this needs more work and analysis. But we think that the government institution today is not enough to help out in a digital crisis. Are we running out of time? The other thing I want to pinpoint, we're looking at more like let's say a little bit more. Roles and responsibilities, Nora. I'm not going to go into this. It's not as a hot topic maybe for you guys, but there's a number of areas in Norway, like the authorities needs to be strengthened in order to control that we're doing what we're doing. We need to establish a comprehensive framework because we have a lot of organizations working on cybersecurity, but it's not really it's a potential, let's put it that way. It's a potential to talk better together, be more efficient, share more information than we do today. Today, we are jammed. Let's put it bluntly, and this is not a secret. Today, the Norwegian government is jammed with handling espionage. What about industrial espionage towards our companies? What about economic crime? What about your problems? If you have an issue that has a digital dimension, we need to get a more comprehensive way of handling this. So a framework around this is crucial, both in terms of escalation levels. When do we initiate the cyber defense at Jørstadmo? When can they contribute? When is it NorCERT? When is it police? There's a lot of cooks here, a lot of good people, but we need to have a more planned way of actually using these resources. We have a small teams here and there that could be stronger together. And then competence, knowledge, education, research has been a hot topic. And I thought I was not going to spend most time on this today because then I'll be sort of preaching to the my own community on this. So there's a big chapter on this. And in any sector we have looked at, there's a competence gap. Both in terms of what management is understanding, but more they don't have enough hands to actually deal with the problems. So if you're going into one authority, they maybe have one person on this area, risk analysis and control. There's some exceptions there, but I'm just in general, there's a big gap. And where is all these competent people going to come from? Well, I'll leave that to you guys to answer. But I think our role in this is significant. We have had a long history of education around information security. We have a lot of research on security and privacy also. But this is an exception to the Norway. It's not like that in all universities in Norway and all high schools. So we have lifted up a topic. We need to strengthen the 15 years ago, we look and the last one, but it said the same thing. But it's been underinvested for many, many years in this area. And we actually say that 2015 was a milestone in terms of research to information security with the Research Council's IKT+. That is a monumental in terms of investment into this area. And we say that that's very good, we need more. So keep up the good work, Research Council, and do more of it. My last point, this is a big work. You know, it's hard for me to summarize all these areas in a short period of time, but if you lift this up to a national level and go a little bit back in time in oil and gas, we were exploring oil and gas on the Norwegian territories early 70s. And we got this well managed from the government. They said, you know, in terms of safety, this is extremely important. Health and safety on our platform is monumental. They said the rules and regulations should be really high in terms of requirements. Then we had two big incidents. One was a blowout situation in 72, and then you have Alexander Kielland-ulykken in 82. Alexander Kielland accident was monumental in terms of raising the bar even higher in terms of safety and security requirements. And we claim in the Commission that that has been a competitive advantage for Norway, because we are far, you know, we're using technology a lot more than some of our other countries. We may be as far as you can get in terms of this space comparing to other countries. And we need to have a strategic policy decision on this, like we had with oil and gas in the 70s. We think that if you have a top-down requirement saying Norway should be the leading institution or a nation in digitalization and trust, it would put cybersecurity and vulnerability higher on the map than it is. It's too low on the agenda, right? We need to get it higher on the political agenda. So this is sort of the wish that the politicians, our prime minister, actually recognizing this with this report and raising the bar in terms of both investments and requirements to both our industry, to our critical infrastructures, and us as citizens, so we can be safe using our digital value chains. So with that, I leave it for questions. Laura, do we have a couple of minutes? Everybody read this, or? I not? You did? Well, there's one entrance into this is the public-private partnership, which is sort of the buzzword internationally, like, oh, everybody needs public-private partnership, you know, to do what? I mean, you have to find a goal, right? What is the goal? Yes, it's to align the different agendas between the public agencies and government and industry and research, right? And I think that's the strength of CCIS, that we have these partners that can actually align our agenda and get all our education and research relevant, right? Because that's the pain point, right? You know, antivirus and firewalls. I mean, you know the deal. We need more investments into actually, you know, getting more knowledge on relevant topics that are on the agenda for Norway. And that would be very similar to the international scene, just to broaden it up a little bit. But in terms of this report, this is to the Norwegian government. So we have an important role in terms of, let's say, matchmaking. You have the operational environments, let's say Kraftcert, Finansert, Kripos, whoever, you know, police, with our researchers, with the students, both in terms of putting relevant topics on your courses and on your research. So that's sort of the big goal here, bringing in relevant partners as close as we can. And we're doing that now, we just need to do even more, right? Slobodan? Go for it.
Is it more expensive to further use internet for example, these critical infrastructure systems and build up or build security measures on that and still be insecure than to change the protocol, not to use internet for these things?
I haven't done the calculations. It's a good question, of course. I don't think a lot of politicians, if you bring it up to that level, understand that we have an internet protocol, internet, that is not designed for what we actually use it for today. So that's typically what I begin with when I have my discussions with politicians. You know, our fundamental is coming from an open, you know, it's from DARPA, right? And it's research, it's just experimental, you know, if they knew the critical infrastructure was going to be on top of this, it would be a way different protocol. I think the discussion is long gone in terms of, you know, having a different internet. I think the community internationally is more looking at governance mechanisms. I mean, the risk is not accepted. I don't feel it's accepted by the governments that we are actually going in this direction. But I wish they understood this better. And I think our inherent problem is that this is invisible, right? I mean, if it was a physical thing and you could point at it, like the IMSI catchers outside the parliament, it's a lot easier, right? But this is an invisible problem to our government. But I don't have the numbers, Slobodan. But I know where we're heading, at least at the moment. We are building on top of something that is quite unstable. Oh, Sokratis and I don't want to address this question.
I just want to question the soundness of the
question. You question the soundness of the question.
Sokratis?
Yeah, just to check on
Just keep talking, I'll find it. Well, it's not stated, right? It's a software bug, could be a authentication method, whatever. So, yeah. Right. Well, you know what? I wanna wrap up with one interesting fact, if I may, and I think it's very interesting. From Microsoft published last year, the amount, like how many seconds it took from a computer was hijacked or infected to actually when the whole domain or ADA was taken over. Can you guess how many seconds? Anyone?